Good morning, and welcome to the CyberSmart Morning News Update. With the always evolving world of cyber threats and defense, you need a source you can trust. FBI retired Special Agent Darren Mott guides you through today's intricate cyber landscape and brings you the latest headlines and insights and what it means to you. Let's dive into today's cyber news.
Good morning, friends. Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. This is the CyberSmart Morning News Update. I'm your host, retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent Darren Mott. As always, thank you so much for taking the time to download and listen and pass any of the information you get on this podcast to others to protect them and keep them safe so that they don't have to go find an FBI agent to talk about the cybercrime or cyber issue that they are dealing with. This is my second run through of this podcast today. I did one episode and then my SD card crapped, so I'm going to go through this again. Maybe it'll be better the second time around. The intro's have been a little better already, so we got that going for us, which is nice. Let's hit into the news. First off, from theregister.com, Thomas Claiborne reporting U.S. legislators propose American Privacy Rights Act, and it looks quite good, so says Thomas. Americans may soon live under a new federal privacy law, a mere 2 decades after the U.S. Federal Trade Commission urged Congress to regulate online data collection. On Monday, U.S. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, a Republican from Washington, and U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell, a Democrat from Washington, announced the American Privacy Rights Act, which aims to provide a comprehensive set of rules governing how citizens' data is used. Okay, that all sounds nice, right? They give a quote here about that, you know, how awesome they are, and that's great. I'm going to skip on that particular paragraph. The large unrestrained sales of online data has made a mockery of the concept of privacy, a term that has come to mean data usage among tech firms. In May 2000, the FTC urged Congress to pass a data privacy law, but federal legislation did not flow. At the state level, the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act was passed in 2028 and has been used against Facebook and others. And there's been other state laws that have been created in California and some other places that require reporting of data breaches and things like that. And it does say that, again, U.S. lawmakers have not responded to the challenge about data privacy rules, blah, blah, blah. In 2018, Europe enacted its general data protection regulation. 2 years later, California passed the California Consumer Privacy Act. And he goes on with 15 state laws. Okay, whatever. What is in this bill? That's the question I have. So what does this mean? What does this particular act say that makes it so awesome? The American Privacy Rights Act would preempt state privacy rules with exceptions for consumer protection laws, civil rights laws, laws that address the privacy rights of employees and students, data breach notification laws, contract, tort, and criminal laws, public safety laws, and public records laws, among other categories. That's a lot of categories just right there. So if it does not preempt those, because those are exceptions, what does it really do? That's a good question. I would like to know, but I'd have to read the bill. I guess I should do that. It would require impact assessments for large data brokers using a covered algorithm that poses a substantial risk of harm when applied to minors, housing, education, employment, healthcare, insurance, or credit opportunities, public accommodations based on protected characteristics, or disparate impacts based on such characteristics or a political party affiliation. Okay. Large organizations with more than $250 million in revenue, among other criteria, would be required to have a privacy or data security officer. Small businesses with less than $40 million are exempt from the whole act altogether. The legislation gives individuals the right to sue for privacy harms and disallows mandatory arbitration in claims involving minors or a substantial privacy harm set at $10,000 or physical means or mental harms. That's okay. Generally, the bill aims to give people control over their personal data by allowing them to prevent the sale or transfer of their information and to opt out of data processing if a privacy policy changes. Okay, so I'm all for that. That sounds great. That if it does that, where you can say, I don't want my data provided to anyone. Here's the problem I see with this is the cat's out of the bag. Most of our information, if you've been online for any sort of time, your information's out there. People know where you are, who you live, what you do, what you watch, all that kind of stuff. Then you're trying to put toothpaste back into the tube. Now, for newer users that come up after this that are younger and maybe not online yet, sure, they'll have that protection capabilities, but will they even know how to do it? Will there be things in place that make it easy to opt out? My guess is the opt-out will not be easy, but there'll be ways that the tech firms can figure out how to provide an opt-out and get around what the law says and still be a pain in the ass for those of us to try to protect our data. The key thing you can really do is try to protect your data now. Use VPNs and things like that to limit how much information you give out online if you can. But it's getting harder in this digital world to do those kind of things. And honestly, do we think that this current Congress has the capability, the will, or the resolve to even pass such a thing? Now, maybe they do, because it's hard to argue this, that this is not a good idea, because we've been calling for privacy laws for quite a while. I just don't think that we have the smartest people available to us to create the capabilities that would allow us to be protected. But that is my thought on that. All right, from cybernews.com, Justinus Vanilevicius reporting, Apple privacy protections called into question. What happens on your iPhone does not necessarily stay on your iPhone, despite the company's well-known slogan claiming otherwise. A new study from Aalto University in Finland has demonstrated. The study has found that default apps on an iPhone, iPad, and MacBook collect user data even when they appear disabled, suggesting that Apple users are not in full control of their privacy. And here's a sad thing I'm sorry to say, but if you thought you were in full control of your privacy on any device, you are sadly mistaken. But that's part of it, right? People like to put their head in the sand when it comes to cybersecurity and privacy, but okay. The researchers studied 8 apps, namely Safari, Siri, Family Sharing, iMessage, FaceTime, Location Services, Find My, and Touch ID. We focused on apps that are an integral part of the platform and ecosystem. These apps are glued to the platform, and getting rid of them is virtually impossible, said Associate Professor Jean Lindquist, head of the Computer Science Department at the university. While many studies have looked into how third-party apps erode people's privacy, this is the first time privacy settings of Apple's own default apps have been investigated, the researcher said, adding the results surprised them. Here's the thing. It shouldn't surprise anybody, and it shouldn't have taken this long for someone to look into it. But if you think that Apple is not using as much data as they can pull off for monetization reasons, then you are, again, have your head in the sand. Now, what does this mean? Are you going to go to Google? Are you telling me that Windows devices don't do the same thing? I'm sure they do. I'm sure Google Android devices also do similar things. The cat, like I said, the toothpaste is out of the tube on a lot of this stuff. And it's good that we can argue and cry about it and say, bad things. But at the end of the day, we are responsible for our own data. And if we don't take means to protect it, to secure it, and to at least pay attention to what it's doing and where it's going, no amount of legislation, no amount of bitching about the companies that we're purchasing these devices from is going to stop that. Interesting article as far as, you know, opening the kimono, if you will, on Apple's privacy beliefs, but it really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Darkreading.com, Change Healthcare targeted in a second ransomware attack. This is bad. Change Healthcare reportedly is facing another attack, this time by ransomware gang RansomHub, just weeks after it became a victim in an ELF v Black Cat cyber attack. RansomHub is demanding an extortion payment for an alleged 4 terabytes of data it stole from the company. Otherwise, it's threatening to sell the data to the highest bidder in 12 days. Here's the problem with this data. It contains the sensitive data of U.S. military personnel and patients, as well as medical records and financial information, among other things. This is valuable information to nation-state actors. So in addition to the cyber criminals, you have Chinese and Russian and Iranian and North Korean actors who would find information in this particular data breach very, very valuable. This puts Change Healthcare, a subsidiary of United Healthcare, in what likely is a difficult position in having to decide whether or not paying the ransom is its best option when it's only just begun to get back on its feet from the last attack. Now, the sad thing here is that they weren't able to stop a second attack this quickly. It's been a bad year so far, 2024, for Change Healthcare. And so there's going to be a lot more fallout of this. I'd not be surprised if there's class action lawsuits, things like that, because this data should have been better protected. Even if it was stolen, it should have been encrypted, so it's impossible to read. Again, I don't know how they got in. It would be great to get a postmortem to how these particular attacks occurred. But again, if you are in healthcare particularly, think about how you have your data, how it's stored, how people can access it. Are you using zero trust? Are you doing all you can do to protect the data? Because there is value in PHI, personal health information. It goes for $1,000 online, much more than like your credit card numbers. So this is bad for Change Healthcare. We'll see more what happens down the line as this goes forward, but not good for them. Cyberscoop.com, FCC looks to limit how domestic violence abusers use connected cars. This is Christian Vasquez reporting. The FCC is examining how to protect victims of domestic and sexual abuse from being tracked by their abusers using the connected features of modern automobiles. That's all good stuff. In a proposed rulemaking released Monday, the FCC asked the vehicle manufacturing and wireless service industries to describe connected car services like GPS and sought comment on what steps manufacturers can take to protect survivors by limiting how domestic violence abusers use those devices. The announcement continues its initiative stemming from the Safe Connections Act, which instructed the FCC to assist domestic violence survivors to secure their communications from abusers, such as separating their phone line from a family plan while keeping their number. Vehicle manufacturers have in recent years increased the number of communication services included in cars. This includes GPS and remote startup features that are served as conveniences, but can also be used by abusers to track and harass their victims. So this is all good stuff. Whether it comes to anything that's usable, don't know. The key here is for people that are in this situation, that are victims, to understand and be aware of the particular connections their car may make that make them vulnerable and turn them off where they can. At the end of the day, we still, again, this is still privacy, not a privacy thing, but it's kind of a privacy thing. But you need to be aware of the threats here, like the issues that if I have a car, how much data is it pushing out? That's the information that victims need to know so they can turn it off, trade in the car for one that doesn't do it, have it automatically turned off by default, and you have to physically turn it on. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done for this. Whether or not an FCC rule is going to make it, I don't know, but it's good to raise the awareness of this situation to protect these folks that are in these situations. So I applaud this article. Not sure if the way that the FCC is going about it is going to do much, maybe, but maybe it will. Let's have faith that it does. All right, from Wired.com, how to protect yourself and your loved ones from AI phone scams. So this is becoming a big issue where if you have a little bit of a voice temp exemplar from someone, you can basically duplicate their voice using AI. So grandma's sitting at home. She gets a call from her grandson that he's been in a car accident. He's in the hospital. He needs $1,000 to pay for his deductible or whatever. Grandma's all concerned, and so she wires the money. We're going to see a lot more of this particular scam going forward as AI is used more efficiently for these type of scams. But there's a couple things that you can do that the article lays out that you can use to protect yourself. One is to, if you get a call from a relative and they claim any money, say you're going to hang up and call them right back. You should know their number. The bad guy is probably spoofing the number, and it's going to be very hard for them to have you reconnect back to them with whatever number they're on. So when you call the real number of the person, you'll find out if they are indeed in trouble. You can also have a safe word. So if someone is in trouble, you know what you and them know what the safe word is, but the bad guy doesn't. Bad guy doesn't know the safe word. What work? So that's one thing. Again, awareness, making people be aware of this kind of scam, of what's going on. Be questionable if someone suddenly is asking for money, obviously. And there's a couple more things in the article. I highly recommend you pass it along to the seniors in your life who need to be aware of this kind of thing. Lastly, scmagazine.com. Two new bugs can bypass detection and steal SharePoint data. So 80% of the Fortune 500 companies use SharePoint, as do about 250,000 organizations overall, plus a lot of individuals. But now there are two Microsoft Share flaws that have been observed that could potentially let attackers circumvent audit logs and avoid triggering downloads and then exfiltrate SharePoint data. Well, that's not at all good. The research was considered significant because of the vast base SharePoint has in government and business. Varonis Threat Lab said in an April 9th blog post that they found that attackers can potentially bypass the detection and enforcement policies of traditional tools, such as cloud access security brokers, data loss prevention platforms, and security information event management systems by hiding downloads as less suspicious access and sync events. Varonis researchers said they discovered the two bugs, or disclosed the two bugs, to Microsoft in November 2023. That is 5 months ago. And Microsoft has since designated them as a moderate security fix, and the flaws are in the patch batch log system. So Microsoft, well done, Microsoft. You continue to kill it in the cybersecurity world. That, you know, 80% of the Fortune 500 company SharePoint sites are now open to flaws that can allow data to be pulled from it. Fantastic. So no fix for this yet, which is great. But if you are using SharePoint regularly, be aware of this. And maybe, you know, make sure your data is encrypted. Let the people know to be on the lookout for weird access to the accounts. If the flaw gets around those things, it makes it very hard to protect it. But again, be aware the flaw exists and have a plan, have an incident response plan on how to deal with it if the data is ultimately stolen. As always, articles in this podcast are located in the show notes if you would like to read more of them. If you have thoughts, comments, questions on the podcast, email me, Darren@thecyberguy.com. You can catch me on my LinkedIn profile. Hopefully, this podcast will not be corrupted on my SD card and I can upload it in a meaningful time. As you go through your day, know that knowledge is protection. If you can understand the threats targeting you, you can assess your risk, proceed wisely. Thanks again for listening. We will talk again on Friday.
CyberSmart Morning News is written and produced by CyberGuy Productions. Feel free to email thoughts, comments, or suggestions to Darren@thecyberguy.com. Or follow Darren on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/DarrettMott. Thanks for listening.